Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, at long last, it's the return of Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast where we talk about the Doom Patrol.
Yes, hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out My Greatest Adventure 80.blogspot.com, run by our fellow Doom bro Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio and Podbean.com.
I'm Paul. You can sometimes call me Flanger. And I'm also available on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we also have a Sentient Show Twitter account, which is Wilfred, who's at WFD Pod.
Hello, humans.
And we are sponsored by Comicosity.
Yes, Comicosity is a great site for all the comic book love. And you can also read things about how, you know, everyone hates Howard Chaykin at the moment. Or always. Anyway, Paul, how have you been since we last spoke?
I've been traveling the world.
Ooh.
Yeah, my daughter and I, we had a holiday, so we flew to Tokyo, and it was a shopaholic's dream for my daughter, who is a bit of an anime fan.
Oh, so. She would have been in heaven.
Correct
me if I'm wrong, Wilfred mentioned that it was part of a school excursion. Was that correct, or it was just a holiday?
No, not at all. This was our birthday gift to her.
Oh, nice.
The 18th. So,
well, happy belated birthday to your daughter, and shame on you, Wilfred, for getting your facts wrong.
Thank you. Yes. So I was just an anime Sherpa on the holiday, really.
On dad duty, carrying everything.
Yeah. But we did see some local Japanese comics. It's I can't remember what they're called, but basically, you know how you might be reading your comics and go, I like this, but there's not enough romance or sex.
Mm-hmm.
In Japan, people just make their own, and then they sell them in shops.
Oh, okay.
So there's a whole culture of unofficial fan comics.
Oh.
So and you can pretty much find, you know, most things connected to video games and animes and even some of the Western stuff. I didn't actually find any examples, but I did find a category for X-Men and things like that. So,
wow.
Yeah. So not enough kissy-kissy and other stuff. Make your own.
So, right.
There seemed to be Pokemon ones, which were much more about the dudes who fight with the Pokemons rather than the Pokemons.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, yeah. Anyway.
Yes, I love him, but I have to fight him with my Pokemon animals. But we'll get together in the end.
Stop chucking balls at me and chuck your balls at me.
Oh, my God. Right. Good to know.
Yeah. So, very different. And comic-wise, I didn't take any books with me because I've learned over the years that when you travel, don't take books with you.
Mm.
It clogs up your bags. Yes. So I really dug into the bank of comics that I had on Comixology and other sources.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm reading up a storm. So I read a lot of Marvel. So I read All New Wolverine, the Tom Taylor one about the girl Wolverine, as featured in the recent movie, Logan, who's not Logan, and X-23, I think they would call her.
Right, yeah. Yes.
And that is... I hate to say it, it's really well done, like really well written, likable, fabulous, very funny. There's this, I'll give you an example. Squirrel Girl shows up and gives Laura a real Wolverine as a pet.
That's Jonathan. A very Squirrel Girl thing to do.
Yeah, called Jonathan Wolverine. And at one stage, there's this box, and everyone opens it. They shortly after get killed mysteriously, and no one knows what's in the box. And it turns out to be Fing Fang Pheromone. So when you open the box, it just summons Fing Fang Pheromone and kills you.
Right. Okay.
He's horny or something. So very creative and much, much better than I expected it to be. And also related to that, my son, because he likes the video game Injustice, he got into the comic Injustice. Mm-hmm. And so I've been reading Year One and Year Two, which are by, also by Tom Taylor, Australia's own Tom Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to say it, that Injustice Year Two comic probably has the best Green Lantern stuff I've read since the Sinestro Cold War.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm picking up the big phone and I'm dialing those big numbers. But that's, yeah, it's good. Really good.
Cool.
And because it's sort of outside the DC universe, they can kill people and it's sort of got higher stakes than normal.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because isn't that how the first one starts? Doesn't Superman kill the Joker in that?
Yeah, no, it opens with the Joker nukes Metropolis and kills Lois Lane and her Superman's baby, which is inside her tummy, which is sad. And then Superman loses it and does some heart surgery on the Joker with his fist.
Right.
And yeah, after that, fascist Superman, the go-go. So reading it, you do, I mean, that's one of the hard things about reading it. After a while, you do wish you could read, you know, read about good Superman again. He's a bit of an a-hole in it. But it has some really good stuff with the other characters and, you know, the lines they fall down on and as far as supporting Superman or opposing him and their reasons and things.
Okay.
So, yeah, it, but Year One was sort of all about on Earth, and Year Two sort of takes it to a cosmic level. And I guess next year, when the Year Three trade comes out, the complete Year Three trade, we'll get that, and I'll know what happens in that.
Cool.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. What about you, Mike?
Well, nothing quite as exciting as international travel as some of us, but on the last episode, I was all about the Wonder Woman love. This time around, I've been getting heavily into Detective Comics. So I've caught up on all the Rebirth stuff.
Ooh.
For tech. And I've also shouted myself as a late birthday present, the Golden Age of Batman Volume 1 trade paperback.
Ah.
Which collects Detective
Comics. Pre-Rebirth.
Yes, well and truly pre-Rebirth. So that's got Detective Comics 27 to 45, Batman 1 to 3, and New York World's Fair Comics number 2. And it's kind of... Well, yes, it's interesting to see how far the art of comic books has come along in the last 70-something years.
Yep.
Because this stuff is, you can see that it's very much along the lines of the old newspaper comic strips.
Yeah.
And, you know, 6 to 9 panels on a page is the standard sort of thing. Whereas you look at Detective Comics today and, you know, they've got scenes that go across both pages as you're looking at them. And a lot of the writing leaves a little bit to be desired. Like, there'll be some bits where, I remember there was one scene where some gangster grabs Batman in a headlock and puts his arm around his neck, and the narration box tells you that's exactly the same thing that's happening.
Ah, good, yes.
So kind of over-explaining what's going on.
The so, show and tell factor.
But it's very cool to see, you know, like the very first Batarang and the first Batplane and the first appearance of Hugo Strange and the Joker. So it's kind of cool in a very old school way. And so I'm about halfway through that and very much enjoying it. So I will no longer need to start my Watching the Detectives segment. So I'll be happy enough with starting with this.
Mm, yes. Awesome.
So yeah, but other than that, yeah, just you know, suffering through work and
yeah,
plodding along in life as we do.
Yeah, I'm actually looking forward to reading Rebirth Detective Comics. I think Moby's going to lend me his for the trade that he's got.
I'm really, really enjoying Rebirth Detective. It's really cool what they've done. So, cool. Yeah. Anyway, shall we move on and go and have a look at what's been happening down on Durrington Way?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, I must admit, I have not had a lot of time to focus on what's been going down on Durrington Way.
That's understandable.
Yeah, a lot of my holiday was without internet access, and when I got internet access, it was usually at Ikebukuro Station in the railway station, and I tended to contact my family and things like that at home. Right. I can tell you that there is an alternate cover for Doom Patrol number 7, which has been revealed. Mm-hmm. This is the Doom Patrol issue that's going to come out at the end of this month, I believe.
Yes.
And I guess he's on the alternate cover duties. Did you know?
Nick Darrington?
Nick Darrington!
Huzzah!
And it's a fantastic cover of the Doom Patrol in Dannyland, I would guess.
Yes.
Riding a sort of a bee-type ride where everyone gets to sit in a bee.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole Doom Patrol is in these different bees. So, so in one bee you've got Flex and Casey and Fug. Good to see Fug front and center.
Mm-hmm.
In another one, there's Crazy Jane and Larry, who's passed out because the negative energy is flying around. It looks like Ricardo and Cliff in one of the other ones. And in the final bee ride, what would you call it? Carriage?
Sure.
It's the Reynolds family. So Sam, Lucius, and his wife. Yeah.
Cool.
It's a very cool cover. I like it. And I think it needs to be one of my screen, my phone screensaver.
Cool.
Lock screen. Lock yes. screen. Words. Words good.
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, there's still there's a lot of press happening because of the Doom Patrol trade. There's a lot of interviews. There's Gerard Way on Paste Magazine breaks down what his favorite bits of the trade are. And it's good. I've been hearing people's reactions to the trade as they trickle through. So, a lot of people very impressed with it. I mean, they've heard us talk about it, but now they're actually reading it for themselves and going, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, I like it.
You're welcome, everyone. You know,
we told you.
Yeah. It was also interesting to see that Gerard Way released a Spotify playlist.
All right, yes.
Based on, I guess what he was listening to or what kind of influence the opening arc.
Yeah.
So I haven't listened to that yet, but I will get round to that this weekend.
There's probably a lot of Phil Collins, I imagine. And
yeah,
John Farnham.
Sure. Yeah, sure. And some Billy Joel too.
Yeah. We're so edgy, aren't we?
Oh, we're so with it, you know. We're putting it down and getting back up again if our backs don't give out.
Do I hear ticking?
Ah, thank goodness, yes. Once again, it's the dulcet tones of the Doom Clock. So looking upon the face of the Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had in our hot hands came out only 9 weeks ago, issue 6 of volume 6, which we covered back in episode 92, which showed the Vectra's plans for more Danny Burgers being put to a halt and the patrol reunited for the most part at this stage. Issue 7 is due July 26th, so only 3 weeks away. I'm
wow.
excited.
Yeah.
Can't wait. It's going to be so good. And hopefully they'll stick to a schedule.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. And this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for $2.50 on July 3rd of 2002, which is 15 years ago to the day as we record this.
Wow.
So that's nice. With a cover date of September of that year, was Doom Patrol number 10 from Volume 3 by John Arcudi and Tan Eng Huat. Titled Asphalt and Good Intentions, this issue showed the patrol putting up with Theodrost once again, also taking on giant killer worms and the appearance of a strange and violent creature calling itself Amazo. Yeah. Right.
Love Amazo.
Mm. We haven't actually covered this issue yet, and that's mainly due to events that occur in Volume 2 having an effect on this particular run of the patrol, and we want to keep it a surprise for those who haven't read either run yet.
Yeah,
so that's why we're maintaining our Pollock run for the most part at present, but we will reach this issue number 10 of volume 3 later this year, so hold on to your hats, kids. It'll be worth it in the end when we get there, I promise.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Hi, this is Batman. Whenever I lose my memory, I head over to the BatmanUniverse.net and check out the podcast, Bat Books for Beginners. The Bat Books for Beginners podcast breaks down and analyzes all of my adventures so I can remember how to get to the Batcave, which Robin I'm working with, and where I parked the Batmobile. Chris and Jerry, the hosts of Bat Books for Beginners, are honest about how well I'm serving the citizens of Gotham. Sometimes too honest, I'll have to talk to them about that. If you wake up one morning and think you might be Batman and have just lost your memories, go over to the BatmanUniverse.net or iTunes and check out Bat Books for Beginners. Now, if I could just figure out who this old man cleaning the Batcave is, that would be great. I asked my friend Scott Snyder and he didn't know. Don't be a supervillain. Visit thebatmanuniverse.net and listen to Bat Books for Beginners, also on iTunes. You'll be glad you did.
Bat Books for Beginners is part of the BatmanUniverse.net Bat Family of Podcasts. Don't listen to Bat Books for Beginners when operating heavy machinery or juggling. If you listen to Bat Books for Beginners for more than 4 hours, call your doctor. Bat Books for Beginners is part of a balanced diet.
It's time for the part of the show that we call Doomsplaining, where we take something to do with the Doom Patrol and we explain it. It's self-explanatory. It's self-doom explanatory. Anyway, what we're talking about today, we're not even talking about the Doom Patrol issues. We're looking at a different comic altogether. It's Teen Titans Spotlight. Why are we talking about Teen Titans Spotlight, I hear you ask, because I've got a good imagination. We're talking about it because it is related to the Doom Patrol fairly strongly. Anyway. So these issues, this is issue 9 and issue 11 from Teen Titans Spotlight. And they both came out after those Teen Titans issues where the Doom Patrol went to rescue Robot Man and Mento. And they wrapped up the whole deal with avenging the death of the Doom Patrol from the 60s with Madame Rouge and, General Zal.
That's him.
Yes, that's him, who only really had the appearance when he killed them and when he got avenged.
Yes.
Anyway, so the first issue I'm talking about is Teen Titans Spotlight number 9, which had a cover date of April 1987, back in 1987. Wow, that takes me back. And but it actually came out on January 29th, 1987, so just after Australia Day, so good times. Cover price of 75 cents, edited by Mike Gold. And this was before Doom Patrol Volume 2 started, so but it was written by Paul Kupperberg, who went on to write Volume 2 at the start. So I think this was like a test drive for some of the characters before he got into the series proper. So I imagine the series was greenlit at the time that he did this issue.
Okay.
Anyway, and pencils were by a little-known comic creator called Dan Jurgens.
Up and comer.
Yeah, nobody. Yeah, he's only been working comics for, 40 years now or something?
Yeah.
Give
him time.
And still on the top of his game because he's taking care of Superman at the moment. Mm. Inked by Gary Martin. Gary. Gazza, as his mates call it. Lettered by Augustin Mass. And coloured by Adrian Roy. And it features a fetching cover by Paris Cullens with inks by Gary Martin. So we won't get into the cover because it contains things about inside the comic. But Teen Titans Spotlight, it was a comic that came out because the Teen Titans were hot. So they thought, let's try and make some more money out of it. Let's have another series that sort of focuses on the characters we don't get around too much. So this was a focus on Changeling, or we call him Beast Boy mostly in our show. Yeah. Anyway, what's it about? So the classic Doom Patrol, Cliff Steele, Robot Man, Rita Farr, Elastic Girl, Larry Trainer, the Negative Man, and Niles Caulder, known as the Chief, and also Gar Logan, who's Beast Boy, are assaulting the castle stronghold of the decrepit immortal general called General Immortus. As the general taunts them from a parapet, Reacher punches the crap out of his castle, and Larry's negative energy wrecks some purple cannons. Why are the cannons purple?
Spooky evil cannons?
I don't know. And Gar turns into an elephant and stampedes his troops because he's a giant green elephant. Ah, good times. Which is what Gar is remembering as he chats to Cliff over a game of pool in the giant T-shaped headquarters that Titans live in and they call Titan's Tower, which is on an island just near Manhattan in the river for some reason or something. Anyway. Cliff is a bit of a bummer and is downcast and announces his desire to quit the heroing shtick. He has actually purchased a horse ranch in Northern California and wants to retire there. As they talk, they cross back to the shore on the Titan's raft, and they both fail to notice the pink energy cloud that floats near them, waiting to attack when the conditions are just right. Look out, pink clouds about. They board a bus and have some banter with the colourful New York locals, and we are reminded that Gar is now called Changeling. And after threatening a man who took his photo, Cliff and Gar head to the New York Zoo, and he's mistaken for Cyborg by an incredibly stupid kid. And Cliff is correctly identified by the boy's dad, who asks Cliff when the Doom Patrol are getting back together. And Cliff walks off, and he's fed up with the attention and the bad memories. It is at this moment that the pink energy cloud decides the time is right, and with quick coalescence, it turns into a lead man who power drives down onto Cliff's back. Oh, what? It's Mr. 104! As Gar mentally lists all the pertinent details about this villain, he races to Cliff's side, and we are treated to several pages of no-holds-barred zoo-fighting mayhem. Gar does the form of a rhino. 104 does sulfur. Gar does water spraying as an elephant. 104 does potassium chloride. Polar bears get startled. Lions get loose. And they are immediately thrown back into their cages. Butterflies and Mercury, which sounds like a rad indie album. And things are getting superheated when this incredibly stupid kid, again, is trapped in the midst of the battle. This little idiot seems done for when suddenly Gar goes form of a big bird. Not Big Bird from Sesame Street, but, you know. And flies the kid out of there. Oh, Beast Boy. As Cliff grapples the sulfuric scumbag, Gar suddenly spots a scientific solution. Soon, 104 is being sprayed with carbon dioxide gas by a green gorilla Gar. As Mr. 104 is carted away in some sort of high-tech container, Cliff tells Gar that he's a pretty good hero. Despite Gar's annoying personality, he's still going to retire. Plus, in the middle of the comic, there's something about Mento having captured Aqualad. So Mento is mental at this point.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. This is early Dan Jurgens. So his art was forming. So it's workmanlike, not John Workman Jr., the letterer, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's okay, you know. It gets better. His art gets better, but he does a good. He's got some challenges. He's got to draw elephants and polar bears and butterflies and things like that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Gar taunts a lion in the form of a monkey for a while. I don't know why. Gar does a lot of stuff that is annoying.
Young people, I tell you.
Young people generally, yes. Yeah. And you got that stupid kid who thinks that Cliff Steele is a cyborg. From the Teen Titans. What a numbskull. Yeah, but
nice to see Mr. 104 making a return appearance.
This is his return after he clashed with the team in the 60s. So he had two battles with them in the 60s and then he disappeared. And this story is very important because he gets caught here. And next time you see him, he's working with the Suicide Squad.
Yeah,
so that leads into that. It's all connected.
And it's nice to know finally, because I can't remember where we saw it, but yes, Cliff did have his horse ranch.
Yeah, that's in the start of Volume 2. Cliff is, absolutely torturing a horse by riding around on it in Volume 2.
That's right. And this is, okay, now I know where that idea came from, because I haven't read this particular issue. And yeah, I remember at the start of Volume 2, it was like, why is Cliff on a horse ranch? Now we know.
Yeah, but Paul Kupferberg, he's lining up a few things that he wants to use. So and sort of explaining why, Gar isn't with the Doom Patrol because he's a Titan. But it sort of emulates the Titans of the time in that it's very wordy. There's lots of talking. Everyone's talking all the time about everything. But Mr. 104 is single-minded, I guess. You know, he's very focused on destroying Cliff Steel. And he doesn't – I mean, the other thing is he's changed from Mr. 103 from in the 60s to Mr. 104 here. So, you know, without any fanfare. So I think he just updates his name whenever there's a new element added. So if he turns up today, he has to be Mr. 118.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, even though all the new elements have added a very sort of weird atomic ones that no one really understands.
That would make for some cool-looking effects on the page, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'd like to see Mr. 118 in Doom Patrol Volume 6.
Yeah, you're welcome, play. Nick and Jared.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, guys. Yeah. Come on the show, please. Anyway, yeah, any other questions about this comic?
The fact that it's very wordy doesn't surprise me. I mean, I remember that previous Titans and Doom Patrol story, getting revenge on General Zal, that was so wordy. Yeah. And I think that was just comics at the time.
Yeah.
That they tried to cram as many words into each panel as they possibly could, you know?
Yeah. It's very Teen Titans.
Mm. But no, it sounds like it was an enjoyable read.
Yes. So we're going to skip over issue 10, which is about Aqualad in the clutches of Mento. I think we'll have to swing back to that stuff when we really focus on Mento's mental years, which is what his time with the Titans was really all about. He literally becomes a Titans villain at this point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So do you want to take us through issue 11 of Teen Titans Spotlight?
Oh, nervously, yes. So Teen Titans Spotlight number 11 has a cover date of June 1987, but went on sale March 26th of that year for a mere 75 cents, giving us 32 pages, edited by Barbara J. Kessel, written by Randy Lofficer, and also Jean-Marc Lofficer. Apologies if I've mangled that surname. Pencils and colors by Joe Orlando, inks by Bruce D. Patterson, and letters by John Costanza. And it's got a cover by Joe Orlando and with inks by Bruce D. Patterson again. And it shows the Brotherhood in the middle of a fight with some strange-looking mutants and a giant white wolf. And there's a base behind them shooting down upon them. And there's a call-out box asking, why must these villains become heroes?
Yeah.
Why indeed?
Because the writer wants to. Hey.
Pretty much.
Don't you think on the cover, Monsieur Mallow looks like a chocolate Yeti?
Yeah, that's a good description. It's an interesting cover. It's not the best.
It's Joe Orlando, though, who's like a legendary creator.
Mm. Yeah, but this. Okay. But anyway, as we dive into the issue, it opens 5 years, quote unquote, in the past at the secret headquarters of the Brotherhood of Evil, hidden beneath a girls' school in France. I'm so glad they kept that. We're shown the evil mastermind and leader of the Brotherhood, the Brain, reminding his intelligent ape companion, Monsieur Mallard, that their former partner, Madame Rouge, knows that Brain was the one who created the evil within her, and she will now do anything to destroy them in revenge.
When suddenly we saw that in 18 Titans issue.
Yes.
No, it was in Volume 6. No, Volume 1. I'm all over the place.
We have seen, her getting her
revenge. Yeah, this is at the end of Volume 1 of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, where she was getting revenge on Monsieur on Mallard and the Brain because the Brain messed around with her brain and she kept swinging between good and evil and he switched her into evil permanently.
Yeah.
And then when she found out, she went more nuts and she destroyed them. So this is, this is sort of diving right into that story there. And, of course, the building is blown up. Suddenly, with a mighty scroom, right after the Brain has reminded Mallard of this. And this leaves the Brotherhood dead, apparently. Because then we jump to present-day France, specifically to The Dome, an organization that monitors and coordinates international superhero activities. And we meet head of Department Gamma, Colonel André Chavard, and a woman named Belphegor, who's The Dome's acting director. And they're discussing the man who Chavard replaced, a Captain Auguste Toulon, who it turns out had connections with the Brotherhood, but manipulated Madame Rouge into destroying them in order to destroy evidence of their arrangement. So, okay, apparently Toulon clued Madame Rouge into the fact that it was Brain responsible for her brain.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So Belphegor is certain that Brain and Mallet are actually still alive and that only lifelike substitutes were destroyed in Rouge's attack, leaving the real villains to start recruiting for a new Brotherhood, including Angela Hawkins, who's known as Phobia. Belphegor reveals to Shavar that she's telling him this so that he can leak this news to Toulon, who can then destroy the Brotherhood once and for all.
Okay. Right.
Still with me?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in Saint-Tropez, the real Brain and Mallet, along with Phobia, are trying to recruit Emile LaSalle, also known as Warp, to join them in the new Brotherhood. But suddenly, the villains are attacked by a squad of Toulon's heavily armed soldiers. Seeing no other option, Warp agrees to join the Brotherhood and begins to teleport them away to safety. But Toulon has anticipated this very thing happening, and one of his soldiers fires a specialized weapon at Warp, interfering with his teleportation powers. And so the Brotherhood rematerialize in the middle of a huge battle upon an outpost in a strange post-apocalyptic looking world. As they begin to defend themselves from an attack of mutated warriors, they are joined by an army calling themselves the Second Chance, who are led by a red-headed man riding a large white wolf. As the battle is won and they claim the outpost, they learn the redhead is named Tin, and that they've arrived at the end of the world. Oh no. Later that night, Tin introduces the Brotherhood to an old man called the Captain, who explains what happened to their world. And back in their 1950s, an associate of Tin and the Captain's, who was called the Professor, designed a revolutionary atomic engine that allowed their small European country to launch its first expedition to the moon. After that, global tensions increased to the point where cold wars became hot, and a global war became worse than anyone could imagine, leading to mutations such as the warriors they just fought and Tin's pet half-wolf. With this world on the brink of atomic annihilation, Tin's forces were attempting to capture a giant space ark in order to give themselves a second chance, hence the name of the army. Later, the Brotherhood discusses their options of returning to their own home. Due to the weapons blast, Warp can't recall the exact location to return home to, but Brain is confident that he and Mallet could build a memory-inducing device to find that information within Warp's brain. Realizing that the best place to find any sort of usable technology in this post-apocalyptic world to pilfer will be in the space ark that Tin's heading to, so the Brotherhood agree to work together and help Tin and his forces. So the next day, the Brotherhood and the Second Chance Army converge upon the heavily defended base that's home to this space ark. When Mallet asks Tin whether they are to sneak in or lay siege to the base, Tin tells him that the only chance is to launch an all-out attack, and soon another mass battle erupts. So their combined forces take on the swarms of warrior mutants, and when they first believe they'll never get to break through the gates, Brain reveals his plan and has Warp open the gates from inside the base, allowing them to take control. In the main citadel of the base, Tin confronts his enemy, Minos, who looks like a Texan oil baron for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why. And he says that they could have worked together to save this world. But Minos, in turn, blames Tin for the state of the world, saying he and his friends gave the world the stars before anyone was ready for them, before returning to play explorer and adventurer while the world disintegrated around them. Suddenly, Minos reaches for a panel, threatening to destroy the Ark, but Mallard guns him down. The ape turns to Tin and says he should have killed Minos long ago, as mercy is always a mistake. Right. The captain arrives, having located and rescued the professor, and they enjoy a brief reunion with Tin before the professor says everyone needs to get aboard the Ark, as a planet will explode at any minute. Right. Although Tin offers the Brotherhood the chance to join them aboard the Ark, Brain declines, and they set about hastily building the memory inducer for Warp. Thankfully, the experiment works, and Warp can remember how to get them home. So the Brotherhood teleports back to Earth, and the space ark launches just as the weird world explodes. And back on our world, Belphegor somehow senses that the Brotherhood has returned and survived Toulon's previous attack, and sure enough, the Brotherhood have warped straight into Toulon's home, where they take care of him once and for all. And so the issue closes with Toulon's funeral, where he is posthumously awarded the knighthood in the Legion d'Honneur. Apologies to any French listeners if I've mangled that. And attending the funeral is Belphegor herself, and she's annoyed that while the Brotherhood lives, she's glad that they took out the captain before he could pose any further threat to Colonel Chouvard.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
A bit of weird manipulation going on there for a very convoluted reason, but yeah. I guess this one you kind of have to be a bit more aware as to what was going on in DC at the time, because there's mention of the Global Guardians and Infinity Incorporated, which I've never read, so I was a bit of a loss as to the references to those teams and what was going on in DC at the time then. So
yeah, well, yeah, the Global Guardians operated out of the Dome, and they had representatives from all around the world.
Mm.
Who were, you know, superheroes, and they sort of got disbanded when the Justice League International formed, and some of the characters actually ended up joining the JLI, like Fire and Ice,
right,
or Ice Maiden and Green Flame, as they were called back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm only familiar with them from the JLI stuff, mm-hmm. but you know, it was great to have international characters, but. We have to talk about this issue. It's like, I know Jean-Marc Lefebvre. Mm-hmm. I know the name from Doctor Who, Doctor Who fandom. So oh. I think he wrote books about Doctor Who that I read when I was a kid.
Okay.
And things like that. So that's how I knew the name. And Randy, his brother, they teamed up and, you know, they were given the assignment of write a story about the Brotherhood of Evil, and they seemed to want to turn it into a tribute to Tintin. And I have to say, it looks like if you combine Tintin with Masters of the Universe, there's something real weird going on.
That's as good as any explanation as I would be able to give, because that's exactly it. It's the leader of the Second Chance Army, Tin, still has Tintin's red hair with a little tuft at the front. I can only imagine it's Snowy, who has mutated into this giant half-wolf. The captain is it Captain Haddock?
Yeah, Captain Haddock. Yeah.
Captain Haddock, and the professor is the one that builds the engine. So there's references to, you know, Tintin on the moon. Like the rocket that he lands on, it looks exactly the same.
Professor Calculus. And they don't even like mask it. When they show the flashbacks of them, you know, firing the rocket, it's straight from the Mission to the Moon comic.
Yeah.
And they all look exactly like they do in that comic. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of, yeah, they've decided we'll put in this tribute to, you know, this Belgium comic, and, just sort of have their world go completely wrong. And have mutant warriors and giant space arcs.
But fill it full of things that look like toys that were made in the 80s.
Yes! Yes, it was almost like a comic that would get packed with action figures or like some toy play set that was, you know, the outposts they were fighting over. So
it's so weird.
It really is.
And I'm pretty sure the Oil Baron bad guy is an analog from the actual Tintin comics as well, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I've only read a few of them, and that was years ago as well, so I can't remember who Minos is meant to represent. But it's post-apocalyptic Tintin meets the Brotherhood of Evil. It's
if you want to see super buff Tintin wearing a vest, you know, open shirt. And looks like a string of pearls around his neck. This is the comic for you.
Oh yeah. Well, I'll have to get Wilfred to post some pictures up once this episode airs.
We'll get Doug will do the
pictures. Oh, Doug, yeah, of course. We'll get Doug to do it, hopefully, Doug. Thanks, Doug.
But this is weird as
it's
the thing that stands out about this comic is how weird it is. Like, you get an adventure of the Brotherhood of Evil. Hey, let's take them to another dimension where they team up with Tintin.
Mm. Post-apocalyptic Tintin, you know.
Post-apocalyptic, and super buff Tintin.
Yeah, it's very, very strange. And it's cool to see the Brotherhood sort of rebuilding their forces and, you know, getting ready to do evil again. But this is such a wacky adventure that they go on.
Yeah. I mean, I really have a soft spot for Captain Haddock, because if I just grow my beard out and wear a blue jumper, I look like him. but, yeah.
I'm amazed you haven't cosplayed that yet. Well, next Halloween, or you know, next fancy dress party you got to go to.
Yeah.
There you go. But yeah, it's an interesting comic. I think it's very much of its time. The art's okay. There's nothing about it that stands out and makes me go, "Wow, that's an awesome page or an awesome panel." It's just it does the job.
But such a legendary creator, Joe Orlando. He doesn't do a bad job, but it's not magnificent. I mean, I don't think Monsieur Mallard once looks like a gorilla.
No. And has Mallard always been a brown color? I always thought he was black or he's gray.
Been reddish and yeah.
Yeah, he's it's not the best look for Mallard, I have to say.
And he's got his cross bandoliers, but he seems like, is he wearing black undies? He's wearing black Y fronts throughout this comic.
I'd have to double check that. I'm reluctant to take a closer look at a gorilla's crotch, I don't know whether it's meant to be just the shadowy part of that area of his body, but there is a scene where it looks like he's got black undies on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's a very strange comic. It's as you said, it's reminiscent of like a toy line. Although it's not one I don't know if I'd ever buy it.
Well, I think I remember when I first got this comic and thought, oh, cool, it's about a supervillain team. And I remember reading it going, what was that?
Yeah. So like, it's kind of like they say, oh, yeah, we'll help you save your world. But, oh, look, your world's going to blow up anyway. And we need your few bits of workable technology here to help us get home. Okay. It's really strange.
And I think, I mean, clearly it's written. I mean, the main focus of the writing is to scratch this Tintin itch rather than anything to do with the Brotherhood of Evil.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're just, I wonder if they were like trying to get post-apocalyptic Tintin his own series at the time. I don't know. It's really strange.
Yeah.
And I mean, reading all this Doom Patrol, we've read some strange stuff, but this is pretty wacky.
Yeah, it really isn't what you expect from the packaging. I'm going to get a Brotherhood of Evil story. Oh, no, you're not. You're going to get He-Man Tintin.
Yeah. But look, it was an interesting read. I'll give it that much. And I thank you very much for gifting me this copy because, it's certainly got a place on the shelf there with the rest of the Doom Patrol.
I believe it's one of those really expensive comics that, Teen Titans Spotlight was just a money pile.
Wow.
I'm lying.
All right, okay. I was starting to wonder.
These box warmers, these ones.
Right, okay. Well, I think you had the one that was tied closer to the Patrol themselves. This one was just wacky misadventures of their enemies.
Yeah, I still can't believe this comic.
That makes two of us. So, okay, you've read a fair bunch of Titans. Would that be fair to say?
Probably okay, read so through the main series at least once.
So the Brotherhood, did they make much of an appearance in the Titans run themselves, other than like the story we've covered previously where the Titans are out to avenge the Patrol?
Yes, they did. They sort of came and went. They became like, villains who reoccurred.
Okay.
And after this, it sort of opened the gateway for them to pop up in the rest of the DC universe. So they had appearances in like Batgirl and things like that. So,
okay.
Yeah. And then, you know, I guess in the 2000s, they sort of split into smaller groups. But, I mean, yeah, Warp was always their mode of transport. Mallard and the Brain tended to come and go a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Phobia, Warp, Plasmus. Plasmus was the other one. He's like a German goo man.
Yes.
who melts people. But, they definitely got around after this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nothing quite as wacky, I'm sure.
Nothing ever like this. Surprised they didn't do an issue where they teamed up with Asterix. And Lucky Luke or someone. Anyway.
Oh, jeez. Oh, wow. Well, I, unless you have anything else to say, I think that's as doomsplained as it's going to get.
Yeah.
Cool.
Doom unexplained, but anyway.
And now it's time for the question of the week. And last time on the show, we asked you, what Doom Patrol character from any run would you like to see in a spotlight issue? And, oh, lucky us. First off, we heard from Aaron Long on Twitter, at Juice005, and he said, definitely Black Bolt.
Thank you, Aaron. You run a good website, but you are a troll.
Yeah, back under your bridge.
Next we heard from Ange, who's at DrAnge70 on Twitter, and he said, I have a fever and the only prescription is more lodestone. So he wants to see more lodestone from volume 2.
Cool. We then heard from Odd Fellows Thoughts at The Gaunt Man on Twitter, and he said, volume 3 Robot Man.
Ooh, we haven't really had the secret of volume 3 Robot Man yet, but
No. We'll kind of get to that later in that run, but that'd be an interesting spotlight. Yeah.
We heard from James Hudson at JA Hudson 1313, and he said, I'd like to see Lodestone featured. So another vote for Lodestone. Yeah, if you remember Lodestone, she started off as a regular girl who could fly and had sort of magnetic powers.
Yes.
And then she turned into a weird naked girl with an eyeball in the middle of her chest and on her back.
Yeah.
And then flew off into space.
Yeah. Never to be seen again.
Never to be seen again.
We then heard from at Fractures, Fracknarok, as he's known on Twitter. And he said, Spider Legs Robot Man. I love that armor. It had legs, it had lights, it had guns. Sigh.
It had guns in the thighs, remember? Old thigh guns.
Yeah.
Yep. We heard from Saul Bishop, and he said, Mento, but he wants it written by Warren Ellis and Chris Sprouse.
Ooh.
Yeah. Cool.
That'd be interesting.
That would be weird. It'd last for 6 issues and it'd take a long time to come out, but it would be interesting.
Joe Crawford at J3K_C on Twitter said, Rita. And he gave us some of her artwork from the Volume 1 run, where she's holding up a train and shooting a rocket out of it.
Looks like filleting a train till it explodes.
Oh, God.
Rocket. We heard from Astrakis, our buddy Astrakis 1, our buddy Kevin, who's Win Kit Chervil mate. What's a Chervil mate?
I don't
know. And he said, we don't know nearly enough about Mento. I think Mike knows enough about Mento, but yeah, I'm with you. I'd like more Mento.
How do I know enough about Mento?
Oh, aren't you sick of Mento? You've had your fill of Mento.
Oh, yes. Okay, I get you now.
Yes.
I thought you were saying like I had some secret, you know, file on him or something. And
no, I'm not saying you're the Mento expert.
God, no.
You're the one who is done with Mento.
I'm so done with it. Craig101 at Craig R. McD on Twitter said, Elastawoman, Rita Farr.
Yeah. Why not? We heard some Doug Zavisha. Zavisha on the Twitters. And he said, hot hands. And he said, kidding, I kid. Seriously, though, I'd like to see more Celsius. Wasted potential there. Yes, Arani Celsius from the leader of the Doom Patrol at the start of Volume 2.
Yes.
Who died.
Died. Died saving the world, I guess we could say.
Or committed suicide.
Yeah, it was a fine line.
Yeah.
Oh, she invasion.
Had a troubled life, didn't she?
She did. And Jeffrey Brown at Tosijo. I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. It's Tsujigo. Tosijo. Yeah. Jeffrey,
that's a Phil Collins song, isn't it?
Tosijigo. Yeah, I love that song. Jeffrey also said Celsius and provided a picture of her from early in volume 2. So, yeah, another word for Celsius.
Eric Larson Celsius, too.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah. We heard from Carthy Carcarella, who's Wheel Stealer Online on Twitter, and he said, but yeah, Celsius. Yeah, another one for Celsius.
Yes. We then heard from Alan Middleton at Professor Alan, and he said, Negative Man.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah, cool.
Bit of Larry. Bit of Lazar.
Yeah. Lazar.
We heard from Obi-Wan, my friend Moby. And he said, I know I'm too late, but it occurred to me that knowing more about the mystery that is Negative Man's spirit would be a good thing. You're not too late, and it would be a good thing.
It would be, yeah. Well, we're getting some sort of explanation to it in Volume 6, but yeah, it never hurts to know more. Yeah. Martin Gray, at Mart Gray on Twitter, said, Rita, she was around at the start of the DCU and may have interesting connections we never saw.
Yes. Yeah. We heard from Coffee and Comics, which is Clinton Robson, and he said, Crazy Jane, Negative Man, or Rebus would all be great. Yeah.
True. I think a spotlight on Rebus would be interesting, I think.
Well, when he goes to the moon and lays an egg, that sort of thing.
That could be covered within it, I'm sure. Rifty at Rift1821, tech support for our show, said he can't choose between Rita, Fug, or Danny.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I think Fug would be a good one.
Yeah, I think so too. We heard from Tim Price, who's at TimPrice17. That's the price of Tim. And he said, Rita, same reason as someone else, or Danny the Street.
Cool. And then Endless Mike at MA Solco said, it seems like Rita has had the least focus in the modern era and deserves a spotlight. Okay.
Lots of votes for Rita. I think Rita's winning. We heard from Dr. DC Podcast, and he said, Coagula. Oh,
yeah.
One of the first transgendered comic book characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would be good to see more of her.
Yeah. Mm.
And then Alejandro Rodriguez said, Beast Boy. Okay.
Yeah.
I think Gar's maybe, well, personally, I think Gar's had enough of the spotlight, but sure.
Yeah. And over on the Facebook, Jared Driscoll, he chimed in with Hot Hands. He definitely wants Hot Hands.
Right.
So, yeah, cool. That's Scott Fisher, never had an official code name. We called him Hot Hands.
Yes, yes. And then on Facebook still, David Ennis said, Kate Godwin, Coagula. He said, this was inspired by the latest Waiting for Doom episode. Thanks, David.
Oh, the previous episode, for those of you listening to them in order.
Yes.
We also heard from Laura Watty, who's at Lyra Fay, and she said, Lodestone with art by Tula Lute. That would be rad.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine Tula doing the last form of Lodestone?
Yeah.
Naked spaceship with the eye in the chest. That'd be cool.
I could. That would be rad.
Mm. Okay, Paul. Who would you like to see in the spotlight?
I'm going to go with Fug, because Fug is a new character and we know very little about Fug. And I think you could have a sort of, you could have a fun wordless adventure with Fug, I reckon.
Mm.
Yeah. Sure. And get a really good artist who, you could get, someone like Dean Rankin or someone who does like sort of funny character comics could really do a fun focus on Fug.
True.
Fun focus on Fug.
Oh, look, that's going to be a spin-off series for sure.
What about you, Mike?
I had to think long and hard about this one because from memory in Season 5, Cliff, Rita and Larry did kind of get spotlight issues. So I kind of wanted to avoid them. So I'm going to go with Niles.
Niles.
I would like to see a spotlight on Niles Call of the Chief that set in Volume 6 but kind of encompasses what Jared and Nick see as his origin in the new world sort of thing. But hopefully sort of encapsulating everything that's come before, except for maybe what happened to him in Burns Run, which because that was just... Yeah, wrong. But yeah, I think maybe it would be cool to see another retelling or a fresh look at Niles' origin and kind of what drives him to do the things that he does.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those characters who shifts in his terms of his benevolence or evilness. And it'd be good to have some sort of, adventure of him on his own just to see, what's he like now?
Yeah.
What is the Niles status today? Is he a complete scumbag or, somewhere in between?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, I mean, all the characters sort of treat him with this regard like they, it's like they've all been memory wiped about his evilness, but they all sort of, they remember it somehow, and, you know, and it just comes through as distrust and distance.
Yeah. They know they have to keep an eye on him, and they have to be, they're better off being near him to sort of, you know, keep a handle on what's going on with him. But yeah,
keep your friends close and your Niles closer. No, that's a...
Yeah. So I'll go with Niles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome. Anyway, that's it for this week's show. So, but we will be back next week. We're going to come back faster and with less time in between. So that's a nice treat for everybody. But next week on the show, we are going to be looking at Doom Patrol Volume 2, Issues 72 and 73. So back into the Pollock run with now Kate Godwin, Coagula, part of the team.
Excellent.
Excellent. So it's. I think we're going to have a bit of mayhem in the woods with people with bird faces and fox faces.
Yes.
That's just my feeling. Yeah.
Could be. Generational war. We shall not be moved.
Yeah. And if you want to respond to our question of the week, we are asking this week, who is your favorite anthropomorphic character? And that means a character who is like an animal, but sort of upright and talking and all that sort of stuff. So you can't say, you know, Snowy from Tintin, because he's not anthropomorphic, but like Wile E. Coyote would be one of those.
Okay. Or Mickey Mouse.
Or Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
The famous mouse. yeah. So that's the question of the week. So if you want to get in touch with us with those responses, you can get in touch via Twitter at WFDpod. You can email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And then we also have the Facebook page and mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is the blog about the Doom Patrol that we get posts put up for by Doug. And can I say, Mike, just going off script, can we get some iTunes reviews?
Sure.
Yeah?
You can say that.
I can. Okay. Yes. What I would like is that some of you may have heard that there's a Doom Patrol postcard done for Waiting for Doom.
I believe the art has leaked online.
It is online now. Mm. Yes, it's been leaked. If you want one of these, the next 10 people to leave us an iTunes review will get one.
Yes.
Yes. So wherever you are in the world, I would just point out we have no Australian iTunes reviews.
What?
The shame. The shame.
Ring that.
We got one
shame
in Italy down. And none in Australia.
Wow.
How does that work? Anyway, so the next 10 people to post an iTunes review will get a postcard sent to them.
Yes.
Yes, we promise. So, yeah. All right. I think that's it for the show.
That's it, yeah. We'll sign off for now. Thanks for joining us again, guys. We'll catch you again next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.